Welcome to This Is Money in partnership with NS&I. I'm your host, Georgie Frost, and alongside editor Simon Lambert and I is assistant editor Lee Boyce. And coming up today, use it or lose it. With the clock ticking on Brexit and the tax year, now is the time to sort your ISA or your pension. However, you may already be too late, as some banks and building societies have already pulled their market leaders, saying that though Lee has still managed to find his top cash picks for 2019, plus Simon helps you get started on investing in an ISA and how to choose the best and cheapest SIP, we call in the experts to give us their last-minute fund ideas, and we tackle the B word, yes, Brexit, and its potential impact on your money, especially for older savers. Don't forget, you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving you 100% security for your savings, backed by HM Treasury.
But first, this was the week we were meant to be leaving the EU, while next week is when we have the end of the tax year. Now, only one of those events is ever going to be certain. So if you want to make the most of your ISA or your pension allowance, get on with it now. You have until 11:59 p.m. on April the 5th. So Simon, you wrote your opinion piece on this, speaking as you did, and I think probably we all could in this studio, as someone who has a tendency, can I say this, to leave things to the last minute. How long do we realistically have though, Simon?
I would strongly advise not waiting until 11:59 on April the 5th. However, if you look at some of the statistics that come out from some of the DIY investing platforms particularly, you wouldn't believe the number of people who do leave it until after 11 p.m. on April the 5th to put money into their ISA. We had a comment probably on this very column saying, how likely is it that someone who's got £20,000 to stick it in an ISA is going to leave it until the last minute? And actually, there are people who do. I said, why don't you use March the 29th, the day that Britain should have been exiting the EU, as a handy reminder that you have 1 week left to sort your ISA or your pension or anything else that you need to do this tax year. Mm-hmm. We now know that March the 29th is not the day that Britain will leave the EU.
However, it can still be a reminder to do all those things that you suggested.
Exactly. And if ever there was a lesson in not leaving things to the last minute, let us take heed of Brexit. I sat this week and I watched the results of the indicative votes come in.
No.
Don't worry.
No. That one.
Yeah, that one. Don't worry. I don't sit there watching the BBC News of an evening. My wife had it on the TV. I was doing something else. And she said, do you mind us leaving this on because you're doing something else? I said, no, fine. And we had the pleasure of watching Mr. Burko stand up and do his preening pompadour act.
Not as much pleasure as Mr. Burko had standing up.
Yes, I'm sure Mr. Burko watched that back a number of times once he got home. He Skyplussed it. He stuck it on his Virgin box. He even got the video recorder out just to make doubly sure. Yeah, exactly. And watched himself stand up and read those out. But I did think, why didn't we try to work out what we wanted to do 2 years ago and then spend 2 years trying to do it, rather than spend 2 years trying to do something else and then at the last minute work out what we want to do? And I think that even if we do end up leaving the EU on whatever date that is, it is slightly embarrassing that we haven't done it on March the 29th. And I speak as a man whose attitude to deadlines is to ask for an extension just after the deadline has passed. Okay.
Same.
But I think it's slightly embarrassing that we didn't do it. So on a lesser scale, don't do that with your ISA or your pension.
Good warning, good warning. If you want to transfer, does that add additional time?
If you want to transfer, it is not an issue. This is only important for new money that you are putting into your ISA or your pension in this tax year. So any money that you already have in your ISA or your pension or any other tax-friendly savings or investing scheme, you don't need to worry about that stuff, okay? You just need to worry about money you want to pay in this year. So the question surrounding that is, who's going to be able to fill up that £20,000 or £40,000 of a pension? Unlikely that most people will. So with an ISA, maybe it's less important than it was, but people do have large lump sums sometime. Some people might have inherited some money. They might have taken it from their pension. They might just have a lot of previous savings that they think, I want to get into my ISA. There is definitely still an advantage to having an ISA, even in cash. The interest that you earn is tax-free. You have the personal savings allowance nowadays. But do you know what? It's £1,000 if you're a basic rate taxpayer, but it's only £500 if you're a higher rate taxpayer. And someone might take that away from you. And you never know, we might get a new government sooner than we think. With a pension, one of the key reasons for many people doing this with a pension can be that not only are you getting money into your pension, and that is tax friendly because you get the tax relief, but also it reduces your taxable income for that year. So particularly people who are near a tax bracket, they might go up a tax bracket, or also particularly people who are self-employed, it can be very wise to get that money into your pension before the end of the tax year.
Fantastic advice. So get your skates on, yes. But Lee, as we said earlier, even if you do it now, you may still be too late. So one of the problems that you and I have spoken about many times on this podcast is those blink and you'll miss them top rates, offered, pulled by the time you've even noticed them. Well, we've seen this happen with some of the market leading cash ISA accounts, haven't we? Some have been pulled with more than a week to the end of the tax year. Others are warning that new savers need to get their paperwork submitted before this weekend, or you may miss out. Lee, this seems rather unusual move, doesn't it?
It isn't, Georgie. It's a lot of the time, a lot of these top rates get offered by smaller providers who fill their coffers quicker. They'll have targets of how much money they want to bring in. And if that target gets met pretty quickly, we can see some of these top rates go. Now, the grumbling for a lot of people from that is, if you put a top rate out for a couple of days and you haven't had a chance to get around to open it, it's quite annoying, it's quite frustrating. It doesn't look particularly good, I would say, as a savings provider doing that. So what we've seen the last couple of weeks, for instance, Coventry Building Society, which is one of the biggest mutuals, brought out a Best Buy Easy Access Cash ISA. It lasted 15 days. The reason being for that is that there's actually been a much bigger appetite this year for cash ISAs compared to last year. I've seen all sorts of figures bandied around.
Why?
I think there's a couple of reasons, really. The rates have improved somewhat, so people are seeing it as a more worthwhile savings vehicle once again. And people actually probably are a little bit more aware of how easy it is to, you know, if you start building up pots over the years. We've got the personal savings allowance now on ordinary accounts. So if you're a basic tax rate basic taxpayer, £1,000 of interest is tax free. If you're a higher rate taxpayer, it's £500. Those can be quite easy to breach once rates start improving. So that's what's happened over the last year. Rates have improved not only in ISAs but other savings rates as well. It makes the ISA a little bit more attractive. So some of the stats I've seen this week, that there was £1.2 billion poured into cash ISAs in January, which is the most up-to-date figures we've got. It'd be way higher for March just because of ISA season. People get more aware about, you know, beating the deadline. That compares to £275 million January last year, so fourfold increase in people putting money into cash ISAs. There may be a little element of people worried about, we had that sort of stock market
wobble. I was about to ask you
towards
that.
The end of last year.
And so with Brexit and
with Brexit, and people might be just parking some sort of term for them. It's like cash and wait or something. You just kind of put your cash and wait for things to ride out, and then you decide actually maybe you're going to open a stocks and shares ISA in the new year, in the new financial year, or do something else with it. So I think a lot of people are parking cash into cash ISAs. And going back to providers pulling rates, I mean, one provider, Oak North, launched a one-year Best Buy rate. It was available for 2 days. What that will be is appetite from people going, you know, well, I'm going to park my cash for a year. That's the best rate. I'm going to open it. Oak North probably didn't have the hugest book that he wanted to bring the money in for. People just go for it, and they get filled up pretty quickly. And we've had Aldermore have come out and said, we're not taking any more money until the new tax year because, again, demands outstripped what they need.
But as of now, you have taken a wee look round, haven't you? And you've spotted a few good ones still left as the time of recording of this podcast.
I think it's worth pointing out that rates aren't as good as what they once were, but they are better than they were last year. One thing I will say is that rates on cash ISAs tend to not be as good as normal savings accounts. There's a couple of reasons for that. One of the big ones is competition. It's quite expensive for providers to run ISAs and launch them and have them. There's way more red tape involved. It's a little bit more difficult. So what we've seen is a focus from smaller providers onto sort of fixed rate, 1-2 year fixes, just run-of-the-mill, non-tax-free ones, just because they're easier to launch, easier to manage, and it's done. So we've got a lack of competition, really, in the ISA tables. Also, with a £20,000 limit, that's quite a big chunk of cash. You know, the average person on the street doesn't have £20,000 of money to save each year. Because of those higher limits, though, people do try and max it out. So people are more likely to put more money into a cash ISA than they are a regular savings account, which means that these targets get met far quicker than they would outside of an ISA for a provider. But there are some good ones out there. We've also seen in the last couple of weeks some of the big high street giants getting involved for the first time in what feels like a very long time, Georgie. So we've seen Santander come out with a couple of fairly decent rates for its 123 customers. Okay, that's not open to everyone, and that might not be great, but there's still millions of people that have that current account, so it's worth having a look into. Nationwide, also doing a loyalty cash ISA for those that bank with it. Again,
is that more common, sort of the tie-ups, the loyalty linking?
It's become more common.
Right.
I think it's a way for these banks and building societies to make it look like they're doing something proactive and offering good rates. And also, there has been this whole push. You know, we've been critical in the past of all sorts of financial organisations for not offering loyalty rates, offering best rates to new customers, etc. So, to be honest with you, I think it's a pretty good marketing ploy. You know, you've got a big enough pool of people to say, hey, look, you've been with us for a little while. Here's a loyalty rate. So we've seen a little bit more of that. We've had TSB come out this week as well with some pretty good rates for the high street, because most of the best buys are online providers or smaller players that don't have a high street presence. And then let's not forget, a lot of people don't like to, you know, especially big sums of cash, to do it over the internet. So they might want to go in somewhere with a branch presence, which is where somewhere like your Virgin, your TSB, your Nationwide and your Santander is where people, you know, are more likely to go with those. But I've had a look around. So the best you can get on a one-year fix at the moment is with Shawbrook at 1.77%. As at time of podcast published,
yes, I'll absolutely.
Add. And then you've got a two-year fix with Charter Savings at 1.95%. And if you want to fix for 3 years, the top rate in our table is 2.05%, and the best five-year fix, which is quite a long time. If you're going down that line, you're probably better off looking into an investing ISA, I would say. You're looking at 2.3%. And in terms of easy access, that Santander EISA I mentioned is 1.5%. That's only for 123 customers, and that is only online. That one, if you go in branch, you'll get not as good a rate, but they'd probably help you set it up if you needed to, I would imagine. And elsewhere in the easy access states, you've got Yorkshire Building Society at 1.46%, then you've got Paragon and Virgin at 1.45%. These rates aren't groundbreaking. They're not going to make you rich. You're not going to end up with an absolute shed load of interest. But people have built over the years, you know, the ISA is 20 years old this year, Georgie. Did you know that? Oh, it's only been everywhere in the last couple of weeks. But it's 20 years old this year. Yeah. And if you saved up in one of those from the start, you could have built a quite sizable nest egg. Okay, the rates haven't always, the allowances haven't always been as high as they are. They used to be far lower than £20,000. But we've had an example last week of a man who, you know, has invested over the years and he's an ISA millionaire. That classic, you know, he's maxed it out every year.
So it's good if you can max it out, because 20 grand is a lot.
It is a lot of money, but it is very handy to keep your money shielded from the tax man. And that's why ISAs are still popular. We had an open ed this week from Gordon Brown, the former Prime Minister and, of course, once Chancellor, who launched the ISAs back in 1999. And it was almost like a proud dad, I would say, in that article, saying that, you know, he was quite proud of the ISA and how it's gone and how people are shielding billions from the tax man in this way. I would say it should still be part of your portfolio. It is still worth starting the habit. Not everyone can max out the allowance, but even if you are just putting some away each month, you could build pretty quickly.
Do what you can. Yeah.
And that means you can keep it away from the tax man. Who knows what will happen in the future with the personal savings allowance is far more likely to have the chop, I would suggest, than ISAs. I mean, we've got all sorts of ISAs these days, haven't we?
Yeah, and the popularity of the ISA is probably the reason that
exactly
it would be difficult to start fiddling with them too much.
That's what I think. But then again, I mean, it's getting to the point where it's costing quite a lot of money. So
we do have like 800 of them, though, don't we?
Yeah, there are a lot. You can't move from your cash ISAs to your stocks and shares ISA, your lifetime ISA, your health buy ISA into your finance ISA. Can I breathe now? Yes.
Yes. Thank goodness you can. You take a pause while Simon, we talk about investing in an ISA, because I mean, he was talking about there about parking in cash, as it were. Not everyone is going to want to do that. One of the big things that people ask you a lot, though, is if you do want to start investing in an ISA, I don't want to get too involved with it. How do I get started? Just as basic as that. How do you get started? So you've written us a helpful article.
Yes. I guess the usual advice to people is do your research, think about it, all that kind of stuff. But quite often people will say, I just want to do this quickly and easily.
Yeah.
How do I actually just get this done? And in the principle that getting started is the key thing, there are some shortcuts that you can take, some ways to do it quickly and easily. So I guess there's a number of key things that you need to think about. How do you want to invest? What are you investing for, basically? You might have a particular goal, you might have a particular time frame, or it might just be to get richer. Mm-hmm. And as long as you've got a rainy day pot saved up, that's the money you need for when the boiler breaks, the clutch on the car goes, something bad happens like you lose your job. And the general advice is 3 to 6 months worth of after-tax earnings, but some people will go lower than that. Some people will only feel comfortable higher than that. You can start investing and putting some money away, because the key issue is if you invest, then you run the risk that when you go to get to that money, if you need it in the short term, you might have less than you put in. As long as you can stomach that, then you should be fine with investing. So you need to be thinking medium to long term. Then how involved do you want to be? Do you want to pick your own investments? Do you want to be the kind of person who goes out and looks at individual company shares and chooses which ones to buy? Be aware that that involves plenty of research, plenty of keeping on top of things, and lots of people decide to do that and then actually find that they've lost track of their investments. I have plenty of individual shares in my ISA. I don't pay anywhere near enough attention to them. Sometimes you can open the account and be pleasantly surprised they've gone up lots. Sometimes you can open your account and be rather disappointed because they've gone down a lot. So you could pick a fund or an investment trust instead, and you can have someone do the job for you. Or you can pick something called a passive fund, where you just invest in the whole of the stock market. And by trying not to pick a winning fund manager, you don't run the risk of picking a losing one instead. Or you can use one of these new services which have cropped up, which will effectively manage your money for you online. You answer some questions, they tell you the kind of investments that you should be in, put you into them, and then they will go along managing them and rebalancing them as things happen. So it's which level of that you want to go on, and that will then influence where you decide to invest. And this is the important bit, picking the company that you decide to do this with. So you have something called a DIY investing platform, and that is effectively a place where you can go online and you can buy shares, you can buy investment funds, investment trusts, and all other kinds of investments. You can see them all in one place and manage them easily. Some of them are easier to use than others. Some of them are cheaper. Some of them are more expensive. I've tried lots of them. Three that I would recommend for people who are starting out and just want to do this quickly and easily would be Hargreaves Lansdown. That's the biggest. It's a bit more expensive than some of the others, but it's easy and it works and it's got lots of helpful information and it's got a very good app. And if you're starting out, it's not a bad place to be. And even though it charges a percentage charge of your investments every year, if you don't have that much money in it, that won't be so expensive. Another one is AJ Bell. That's a good place to be. A little bit less information, not quite so user-friendly right. as the Hargreaves Lansdown experience, but still a very good place to be and a bit cheaper than Hargreaves Lansdown. And then another one called Interactive Investor. That has a different charging structure, charges you a certain amount every quarter, but you can get all of that money back in the cost of buying and selling funds and shares. All of these offer you the chance to choose model portfolios where they'll help you decide what to invest in, that you can invest in lots of different things, so you could expand your horizons as you go on. You could do regular investing as well as putting in lump sums. The other option is to go down what's called the robo-advice route, which is these services that I talked about where they pick your investments and manage them for you online after some fairly simple questions about how much risk you're willing to take, how long you're investing for, how old you are, and all these things like that. Some of the big ones there, the biggest one is a company called Nutmeg. You've then got another one called Money Farm. You've got Wealthify, which is pretty easy to use. Also, another option you've got, if you want to keep things simple, is to go to a company called Vanguard, which is more like the traditional DIY investing platforms, but you can only buy Vanguard's own investments on it. Now, ordinarily, we would strongly recommend that you don't go and use a platform where you can only buy that company's investments on it. But Vanguard is the world's biggest provider of something called tracker funds, low-cost funds that you just simply invest in the stock market. And they have a range of funds called the Life Strategy Funds, and they mix shares and bonds and other assets. You can decide how much risk you want to take. Just invest in the one on that scale, and it's a very easy and very cheap and cost-effective way to invest. If you choose any of those things, you will ultimately be choosing one that is a decent option and getting started relatively quickly, relatively simply. You could probably do it sat on your mobile phone in about half an hour.
Yeah. For risk of being criticised about my financial acumen, one of the better tips I have is forget your password. Just set up money to go out of your account into your ISA, because not that I wasn't paying attention to what you're saying there, Simon, but I have spent the whole time of what you were saying trying to remember my password. I even forgot what financial service provider I was using. But however, when I do eventually get into I will be surprised at how much is in there.
I'll tell you one thing you probably don't want to do with your password, although this made us chuckle yesterday.
Yes.
An unnamed colleague, who we know, not on This Is Money, I should add, but an unnamed colleague in the wider business, came round to ask us to do something for him and needed to look up his password.
Please,
he was clutching his Filofax-style diary, stuffed full of all his information, where helpfully he has written down all his passwords under P for passwords. And what the passwords are for.
Do as we say, kids, not as we do. And I can tell you, my attempt to reset my login details has failed. I've been locked out again. But anyway, the money still continues to go in. So we were talking earlier about being a little bit Brexit nervous, though. And if you are still, you want to be hands-on, but you're still undecided where to invest your cash, Tanya Jeffries, your reporter, has been speaking to the experts about some of their top last-minute fund ideas for your ISA. So, Simon, just what are the ones that you rather like? Caveat, of course, you are not a financial advisor and all this sort of jazz, but what are you sort of liking here? And is there reason to be a little bit nervous with Brexit? Is that a stupid question?
There's no such thing as a stupid question, you'll be glad to know.
When it comes to Brexit,
It might be a stupid answer.
Yes.
A lot of people are a bit worried about this. I actually think that, broadly speaking, Brexit probably represents, and this is my own personal opinion, don't take this as gospel, I think that Brexit broadly represents more of an opportunity for UK investors than a major risk, because I think that the chances of chaotic, no deal, unprepared Brexit causing the country chaos have receded substantially. I actually think we'd probably be fine with a no-deal Brexit. I think we probably should have done a bit more planning for it. But, you know, I don't think it would be the end of the world. And I think that if you're a UK investor, you're likely to be biased towards the UK. And there are lots of very good companies in the UK whose prices have been beaten down and sentiment has been beaten down against them by concerns over Brexit. So you're possibly going to be buying into something that's cheap at the moment. And one of the best things to do when you're investing is to try to buy things when they're cheap rather than when they're expensive. So I think it probably represents more of an opportunity. There is more stuff that may worry investors on the bigger scale. The China and US trade war. The fact that stock markets have just been going up for a very long time and they tend to go down at some point. The fact that, for example, the US stock market is what drives the investing world and the US stock market is pretty expensive by historic standards. Having said that, there are still good investments out there. And realistically, if you are a long-term investor, you need to think long-term. You need to think 5, 10, 15, 20 years out. And investing has proven to be the best way of growing your money and beating inflation over those periods of time. So we asked some experts what they thought were their sort of last-minute investing ideas, because there's an awful lot of funds and things that you can invest in out there, more than 3,000, and it's quite difficult to just filter that down. So these people do actually have some expertise. They are actually paid to research these things, and they are worth listening to. Not necessarily saying that their answers are going to be the best thing to invest in, but it's worth getting some ideas. So One of these, Leif Kalaif, Hargreaves Lansdown, said, look past Brexit and pick up stocks on the cheap, talking about the UK here. So he likes a fund called Artemis Income, which mainly invests in larger companies that make plenty of cash and can support their dividends. He also mentioned a tracker fund called Legal & General UK Index. Really cheap, has charges of just 0.1% per year, just tracks the UK stock market. And also the Standard Life Investments UK Equity Income Unconstrained Fund looks for good companies that pay out dividends. Another couple I should mention here, James Norton of Vanguard. We mentioned Vanguard earlier. Now, he admits that the ones he's investing in are all his own companies. Mm-hmm. Talking his own book there. But they are simple, easy funds.
You'd hope they would, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Back yourself.
Exactly. Vanguard Global Emerging Markets Fund. So that's if you think that this story of the emerging markets going to outpace the developed world over the sort of medium to long terms holds true. Vanguard Global Credit Bond Fund, so that's some bonds, the safer side of investing. And then also the Vanguard Global Small Cap Index Fund. So that gives a bit more risk. You're investing in smaller companies, but smaller companies have a propensity to be able to grow more. And also for his most trusted go-to fund by far, the Vanguard Life Strategy 80% Equity Fund that he was talking about earlier. So that's on the higher end of the risk scale. Mainly invested in shares, but invest you all around the world very easily. If you also want to invest all around the world, another one that's very popular with investors and has done them very well is the Linsall Train Global Equity Fund, mentioned here again by Leif Kalaif. Nick Train, classic buy and hold investor, has been dubbed Britain's Warren Buffett, looks for really good companies that can make money year in, year out. And then another one to mention here would be from Adrian Locock of Willis Owen, Lazard Emerging Markets. This is his favourite emerging markets fund. The manager focuses on firms with improving financial productivity that have been overlooked by the market. So you're looking in those growth areas of the world, but trying to find cheaper companies.
And just a quick one on climate change, because you've been writing about that. If you want to invest in a better world for our grandchildren.
Yes. We spend a lot of time thinking, or the idea of leaving an inheritance, I think, appeals to lots of us. We'd like to leave our children or our children's children in a better financial position than they would otherwise be, and hopefully in a better financial position than we were. We don't spend so much time thinking about the world that we're going to actually leave them to live in with this money or property or whatever. But that's actually quite a big issue. You don't have to believe in climate change to worry about this. It is worth noting that despite what Donald Trump thinks, 90 to 100% of the world's climate scientists do actually believe in human-driven climate change. Even if you don't believe in climate change, you only have to look around you to realise that we're not doing the world a lot of good. The plastic that we produce and use en masse and litter the land and sea with, the pollution that we pump into the air, the massive rise in carbon dioxide emissions compared to the rest of the time that humans have been on Earth over a very short period of time has got to do something to destabilize the atmosphere. There's all kinds of things that the modern day consumer world is damaging the planet we live on with. Now, you can do things to change your behavior. You can do things to try and encourage companies to change their behavior, buy things that are less polluting, support companies that at least say they're going to do things that are better for the environment.
So you said earlier that people, we don't really think about what inheritance we're leaving our children in terms of the globe, but we are more than ever. And I went to a dinner with Rathbones, and that was pretty much on their number one agenda as to going forward. That those are the things that people are going to want to be thinking about, want to invest in. Is anything related to our environment?
Yes, but there's an important point here. And there's two things, I've been thinking about this a lot recently, there's two things I've read recently that I thought were really interesting. One was a book written by the founder of Patagonia, the clothing company.
Yes.
Now, he originally actually started out making climbing equipment. The climbing equipment that he was making was hugely popular. It grew from like a little, basically a garage business into selling across America and Europe. But he was climbing one day in Yosemite and he realised that these pins that they were making and the pins that they were making for climbers were much better than the ones that climbers had been buying before. But when they were being hammered into the rock, they're damaging the rock. They're splitting the rock. And he realised that essentially the success of what he was doing was encouraging more people to climb, was encouraging more damage to the very things that they loved. And he decided that there must be a better way, and he came up with like a little chuck with a rope on that would just fit into a crevice and you put it in there, it holds you tight, and then when you're done with it, you lift it out and it doesn't damage the rock. And they decided to stop making the pins anymore and only make these. They then continued that theory through with the clothing that they make. They try to do less harm and more good and not chase growth for growth's sake. Now, he admits in the book that there are many things that they've got wrong. I'm sure that if you go Google, you know, Patagonia and bad things for the environment, you'll find some people who've taken great joy in going, ah, look at this company saying it's doing good things and it did this bad thing. But it has actually adopted a philosophy and seen that philosophy through of trying to do better things. And he says that if you are a good businessman, then you should care about your business still being there in 100 years. And that means you should care about the world it's going to be in 100 years. And another thing I read was this article on a website called CapEx about climate hawks. And it was saying that climate hawks are essentially people who want rapid action on climate change now and realise that little things like just not using plastic straws won't shift the dial. So we need governments and businesses to act and to make much bigger, rapid changes. So why am I talking about this to do with money on a money podcast? Well, you can invest to try and do this, as you were talking about Rathbones, okay?
Yeah.
A lot of this, I think, sometimes we think, oh, it's just companies paying lip service to us. It's just greenwashing. But there are actually some funds that go out there and invest in things that are going to make the planet better. And I interviewed a manager a while back of one Impact's Environmental Markets. It turned out that what I'd thought was a bit of kind of dull but worthy investment actually turned out to be fascinating and quite profitable. This investment trust will have doubled your money over the past 5 years, and that's a pretty good return compared to the wider stock market. And it invests in a number of different things. So it invests in a company that is creating a better alternative to cotton, because I always thought cotton, yeah, that's natural, that's good. Nope, producing cotton is disastrous for the environment. It invests in companies that do things like the battery technology that's going to have the electric cars of the future, that are going to make them work better. Farming. Using technology to improve farming so that you can grow more with less effort. Industrial agriculture is a major polluter and a major emitter of carbon dioxide. And if you can bring that down, then you can make a real difference. And it invests in all these different things and you can turn a decent profit. So why not, if you're going to invest your money this year, this ISA season or in your pension, why not put some of it, not necessarily into Impacts, there's other funds and trusts available, but into something that's going to leave a better planet for our children and our children's children. And you can also make some money along the way. And to be honest, this stuff is only going to be a growth industry over the next 10 or 20 years. So in theory, it should outperform.
Hear, hear. And the good news is, I've remembered my password. Right, finally, Tony Hazel, a.k.a. the prudent investor, has been asking the question that I'm sure is on the mind of many a saver, particularly older savers, and we've sort of touched on it before, about the threat of Brexit. Should we be concerned? Simon sees it on as an opportunity. But Simon, you're a young man. If you are perhaps a little bit older, you know, a lot of people will be worrying. I went to the pub last night to pick up my mum, and she was with her friends, and they were talking about this very subject, about being scared of their savings with Brexit coming, not having a lot of time to put things right or just ride it out. Tides have turned. I'm now the taxi driver while Mum has a drink at the pub with her mates. But anyway, so tell us what Tony's been talking about, Lee.
He's talking about just sitting in the back of a taxi with a bottle of champagne, just necking it. And he's recently turned 60, so happy birthday to the prudent investor. And what he's trying to say here, and what the point of this column is, you know, Brexit uncertainty has been sort of lingering around for a long time now, but the last couple of months, obviously, it has really sort of reached fever pitch. And strangely, well, not all you could say strangely or not so strangely, the markets have kind of been nonplussed by it. So compared to what happened in that last little section of 2018 when there was a bit of a worrying drop, the FTSE's up by 7%, FTSE 250's up 8% so far this year, regaining some of the ground that it lost towards the end of 2018. But when you're in your 30s and 40s, of course, we always hammer this home, time is on your side. You know, the little and often, we know that investing in the long term is the way to do it. So, you know, 5 years or more, etc., etc. But when you reach a certain age, you are retiring or you're on the cusp. And when that golden point is to keep going along with it or putting some of it in cash, you know, to keep it safe. But then, of course, doing that, you've got the worry of eroding inflation on your cash because savings rates aren't particularly good. But as Tony points out, if anything happens where there's a big dip in the markets, depending on what it is that you're invested in and where your money is, you could see a large, large chunk of that wiped out if something happens in the next couple of years. So what he's trying to say in this is, he's thinking about whether or not he needs to take a big chunk of this out and put it into cash to keep it safe, or if he just keeps on plowing through with it. But when you reach that age, it's a tough question, and it's a tough one to answer.
And what's he thinking?
Well, Tony came to the conclusion that he's worrying a lot more about what happens to the pound, because it's swinging around is having some impacts on the investments he's made outside of the UK. For example, he bought some shares tracking the US S&P 100 index in mid-December. Since he bought them, the S&P 500 is up 10%. Brilliant, he says. But much of the profit has been lost because the dollar has fallen against sterling by around 5.5%. So his net gain is only about 2%. And he said that this is going to be something that investors need to think about a little bit more. But other than fretting, what he's decided to do is just try to stick it out and try and pick up some bargains where he can. So one of which was he bought Lloyds because he thought it was cheap. So I guess one of the things he's saying is try to buy things that are cheap. And then finally, he says, we live in interesting times, but I desperately wish we didn't.
Really? You desperately wish we didn't live in interesting times?
I genuinely...
We're not going to look back at this and, you know, laugh. And do you remember the days when we just talked of nothing else but Brexit? And Brexit,
I honestly don't think I'm going to look back at the two-year argument over Brexit
with fondness
at this period in time of British political history with fondness. I think I will look back at this
Depends
period.
Outcome,
I think I will look back
though.
At this period in time of my life with fondness. But then that's just an illustration of why, even with all this nonsense that goes on in the world, that's something that you can just stick in the back of your head and, like, you know, go out, take responsibility for your own life and enjoy it, because you only have one of them.
What a way to end it, Simon. Rousing. You can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news, Brexit or otherwise. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you would like to get in contact with us, Simon,
email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk if you've got something that you'd like us to investigate. Tweet us at thisismoney or come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast, where you can find all the podcasts past and discuss the things that you care about in the comments.
Fantastic. And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving you 100% security for your savings, backed by HM Treasury.